You are listening to Meet the Thriller Author, the podcast where I interview writers of mysteries, thrillers, and suspense books. I'm Alan Peterson, an author of mysteries and thrillers myself. That's why when I decided to start an author interview podcast, I chose to interview authors in the genre that I write and love to read. It's been a wild ride, and so far I've interviewed over 200 authors and counting, including thriller icons like Dean Koontz, Walter Mosley, Tess Gerritsen, Lee Child, and many more. You can find the archive of all my interviews, show notes, resources, book reviews, and more over at thrillerauthors.com. From there, you can also join my Thrilling Reads newsletter for book deals on great thriller and mystery books. That's over at thrillerauthors.com. In this episode of the podcast, number 198, we'll be meeting Ron Corbett, who for nearly 30 years was a newspaper columnist in Ottawa, the capital city of Canada. He wrote crime stories, court stories, and what's known as human interest stories. Ron has written nearly 5,000 columns and features and has been nominated 4 times for a National Newspaper Award, the highest print journalism award in Canada, and he has twice been a recipient. Ron's first book of fiction was Ragged Lake, the debut novel in his Frank Jakubowski mystery series, and an Edgar Award nominee for Best Original Paperback. His latest novel, Cape Rage, is the second book in his Danny Barrett thriller series, which will be published on March 19th. Ron still lives in his hometown of Ottawa, Canada, with his family, and from where he writes his thrillers, from a study in a century-old house not far from a good river. All right, so here we go with episode number 198, Ron Corbett. Hey, everybody, this is Alan with Meet the Thriller Author. And on the podcast today, I have Ron Corbett. His latest book, Cape Rage, is the next gripping crime thriller in the Danny Barrett series, which will be published on March 19th. Welcome to the podcast, Ron.
Well, Alan, thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Just to kick things off, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what inspired you to start writing these mysteries and thriller novels?
Okay. Well, I'm speaking to you from Canada. I'm Ottawa, Canada. Anybody listening, if they don't know that, it's not Toronto, it's not Montreal, it's Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada, halfway between Toronto and Montreal, which is my hometown. This is where I was born and raised. My background is a journalist. I was a newspaper columnist for many years. There's 2 newspapers in Ottawa, still are 2 newspapers in Ottawa, which I guess is a bit of an achievement, maybe. And I worked for both of them. As a newspaper columnist, a city columnist, I was fortunate. I had my dream job, the job I always wanted to have. And, you know, Jimmy Breslin, people listening, maybe I'm dating myself saying people like Jimmy Breslin and Mike Royko. But that's the job I had. I wrote crime, spent a lot of time in court at police stations, getting paid for it. Let's be clear about this. Those are the stories I wrote. And I had that job for a great many years. So that was my background as a journalist. Ottawa has Carleton University, the university here in Ottawa, had a very good journalism program. So I even went to school in Ottawa, in my hometown. So that was my background. And when newspapers were doing very well, anybody might remember those days as well, it was a great job. So I did that for a great many years. Before I started writing novels, a lot of those stories that I covered as a newspaper columnist, there were a great many of them, you'll find in my novels. I have 2 series going. Danny Barrett is a Berkeley publication, so that's a Penguin Random House imprint. This is the second one that comes out on March 19th. Cape Rage is the title. I also have Frank Jakubowski Mysteries, which have been published up here in Canada. There's 4 of those. So a lot of the stories that I covered as a journalist have found their way into these novels. I was also in radio for 10 years when newspapers started petering out. I jumped the ship. And did a radio show for 10 years, an open line show. You're in radio, you're doing podcasts a little bit. So I did radio for 10 years and started writing novels. My very first novel, I was fortunate, my very first novel, which was a Canadian novel, Ragged Lake, the first one in the Frank Jakubowski mystery, was nominated for an Edgar Award, which is where I met some of the people that are publishing Cape Rage. So I met some of the people down in New York. I didn't win, but I got a dinner, nice dinner down in New York. And I met some of the people that are involved with Cape Rage. So I think that brings you right up to date, Alan, on my background and how I've ended up doing what I'm doing now.
I'm just so curious, too, because there's so much similarities between the United States and Canada. But do you see a lot of differences between the publishing business between the 2 countries?
Oh, night and day. Night and day. No. It's night and day, man. It's night and day. Let me start. in Canada, you can survive. Well, publishing companies certainly can survive. I don't know about writers, but publishing companies in Canada can survive on government money. You don't really need to have a successful book. Well, sales, you don't really need to have books that sell and make money. What a radical idea in Canada. The government will give you money to sustain Canadian publishing. In the States, your books better sell. Mm-hmm. So it's a night and day difference right there. I don't know whether American publishers get money from the government. Maybe they do. I haven't heard of that. But in Canada, we have a lot of government programs that support Canadian publishers. So it's an irony that way. So that's a night and day difference right there. And the scale is just smaller. It's smaller. The biggest Canadian publishing company would be a medium size at best publishing company in the States. We do not have a Penguin Random House, although they have a brand like the Penguin Random House. There's Penguin Canada, you know, and some very big name Canadian authors have started with Penguin Canada. So the scale is different. The business model is different. So those are two examples right there.
Interesting. And so were you a fan of the genre as a reader before you started to write these?
Very much. I love mysteries. Absolutely love mysteries. You amaze me because you're covering every kind of mystery there is going, I believe, Alan. You're writing, you have thrillers, outright thrillers. You write cozies under a pen name. I don't know how you're doing it. You're covering every kind of genre there is within the genre. But I love thrillers. I love noir. Cape Rage. Well, I guess we're here to promote the book, but, you know, some writers that I admire. I'm looking at the book right now, if you want to run tearing my head, but who was it? Mark Cameron, author of Breakneck. He said it was shades of John D. MacDonald and Dashiell Hammett. You know, I can't tell you how much that touched my heart because I have just about every Travis McGee book there is. And Dashiell Hammett is he's an idol of mine. So these are writers that I admire. The writers that I'm still reading, I'm on a Ross McDonald kick right now. So yeah, these are writers that I greatly admire. And so yeah, it's a kick to be able to write those kind of stories as my job. Doesn't feel like a job, but as what I do right now, it's a real kick for sure.
Yeah, it's a good pivot too, like you said, as a journalist, all the changes now with the newspapers going away and all that. It's such an upheaval now with the state of journalism right now.
We have to find something. Yes, it is. We have to find something to do, right? It's not the...
it's a good timing.
It's not the vocation that it once was. It certainly isn't. So, and a lot of people have found... you do have to find something. Now, newspapers are still there. Okay. And as I said, Ottawa is lucky. Both the newspapers I worked for are still publishing, which is an accomplishment. Ottawa, as I said, is the capital of Canada. So there's a lot of politics here, right? So they have kind of there's an engine here. There's stories here. There's a way that newspapers can survive just on the politics. Now, I never covered politics. So it didn't do that much for me. And I never wanted to cover politics. So it's not, you know, it didn't do much, not much to me. So, but newspapers in general, unless you're the New York Times, you're not doing as well as you once did.
And so could tell us a little bit about the Cape Rage then. Was this based on something that you had covered as a journalist or?
This one, not so much. This doesn't have, let me just think here. Was there any part of, and no, there's not really an anecdote. Some of these novels, and again, there's two series that I have going. As I said, there's the Frank Jakubowski mysteries. That started with Ragged Lake. And again, I was fortunate enough to be nominated for an Edgar with the very first one. Ragged Lake is just littered with stuff that I would have covered as a journalist, including the location. I'll tell you just a bit. Penguin is going to have my head because I'm here to promote Cape Rage, not the Frank Jakubowski mysteries. But to give you an example, the very first Ragged Lake. So this is my first novel. I'm still working as a journalist, right? I'm still working as a journalist, getting my exit strategy ready, right? So typing, I do what every journalist did, you know, I type it away late at night, 5 o'clock in the morning, that kind of thing, getting the book ready. And it takes place on the Northern Divide, which is a real place. It's a continental divide. It runs from Newfoundland, Labrador, peters out in Minnesota. Peters out, interestingly enough, not far from where Bob Dylan would have been raised. Three Hills, I think, is, anyways, within miles of where Bob Dylan was raised, is where it peters out, the Northern Divide. And I wrote stories on the Northern Divide. I didn't just do crime. I did anything I wanted to, basically. And I did, wrote some features on the Northern Divide because it's the headwaters of the Ottawa River. Now I am getting distracted, but I've been to the Northern Divide. And I use that as a location for my fictional detective, Frank Jakubowski. And I completely reimagine the Northern Divide. And it's kind of cool because, well, I love the name Northern Divide. It just sounds interesting, Northern Divide. And I just reimagined all this. And so it's just littered with like real locations, made up locations, places I've been to, people I've met. A lot of that is real. Six novels down the road, it's not quite as heavy with the stories. But it's places I've been to, like Cape Ridge takes place, Pacific Northwest. Danby Island, which again, is it's a real location that I reimagined. There is no Danby Island. If you're down in Bellingham and you're looking for Danby Island, you won't find it. But I lived on Vancouver Island for a year and a half. There is a Vancouver Island. And, you know, if you're plotting or trying to locate where this novel takes place, it would be, you know, 20 miles south of Vancouver Island. But again, you're not going to find it. I told you I was on a Ross McDonald kick right now. You're not going to find a San Teresa. Anywhere around San Bernardino, look anywhere, you're not going to find San Teresa. I've done the same sort of thing with Cape Ridge, which can be a lot of fun. I don't know if you've done that with your novels as well. If you've, have you placed them in a real, real place?
I have so far, but the one, actually the one I'm working on now, which is, I'm still writing it, so it's off yet, but that, I made it up myself too, because it's more freedom.
Is it ever?
Yeah, it's based on a town, and actually it's Minnesota. You mentioned Minnesota, but so it's in my head, the town and everything, but it's made up, and it's so much, I like it. It's a lot of freedom.
Well, that's a great thing about being a fiction writer, Alan. You know, as a newspaper columnist, it used to drive you crazy, and, you know, it's part of the job. You can't complain. But you'd write something, and somebody would complain about the most minor thing, like, that store was on the northeast corner. You had it on the northwest. And he said, okay, just, you know, you pull your hair. But you know, that's a beautiful thing about fiction. You can place it on whatever corner you want. Nobody's going to call you on it. And it's really fun. On the Northern Divide in particular, you can get so many things. It is a real place, but you can have some fun with it. Ross McDonald had a lot of fun. You'd almost think there has to be a San Teresa. You start looking at maps, there's got to be. But no, there's no San Teresa. Stephen King does the same thing with Maine. I forget what his town is in Maine. But
Castle Rock, I think, isn't it?
Sorry, what is it?
Oh no, Derry.
Yeah, but you think that it's got to be there. The town's got to be there, but it's not. It's completely, and it's fun, you know, fictionalizing someplace that is real, but you make it fiction, and why not do it? You could have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, John Sanford does that too. One of my favorites. He writes those Virgil Flowers and Lucas Davenport novels, and he makes up the towns.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. You have three series. I think I'm doing okay because I have two going, but you have three going, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, but I'm just focusing on one now. So, yeah.
Okay.
On two, but I'm focusing more on one. So, I'm not juggling all three at the same time. It gets too difficult.
Yeah, it's funny because I have a Frank Jakubowski one out, just came out end of November. So, I finished one off just not too long ago. And, so yeah, I find it interesting doing two because my protagonists, Danny Barrett and Frank Jakubowski, they're very different. So when you're, you know, ready to put one aside, it's nice to pick one up. I didn't know how you were juggling three.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. You've never had juggled three then.
No, I just focus on one. So I mean, the cozy and the thriller, I always have one or the other. So I do those two, but you know, that it's been a few months now since the last cozy one. So right now I'm just focusing on the thriller.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Well, you keep yourself busy. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's fun. But yeah, it can be a little confusing sometimes, especially there's such different genres between the two, a thriller and a cozy. You have to be cozy. Got to keep things in the light.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm not doing. You know, the genres are similar. Both these are, well, they're noir. They are noir. There are. So I haven't changed the genre to the two series.
I really like your cover of Cape Ridge too. It's a very
I do too. It was a dynamite cover. And not so, AI, by the way.
Oh yeah, that's the big AI thing. Everyone's so worried, concerned about everything now about it, AI, but we'll see how that pans out in the next few years.
Well, if I was a graphic designer, I would be worried about it, but yeah, no AI.
Yeah. Well, I have read some of the designers that I follow are thinking that's going to help them with a little stuff. So they'll still...
Oh, let's hope so.
You'll still think you'll need a human input, I would, at least for the... in the foreseeable future, but who knows, right? That's fast as things are changing. Who knows?
Yeah.
And so, you said this, so Cape Rage is the second one, in the Danny Barrett series. Okay. And so how did the series come to you? Just kind of curious about your process. Do you envision it as a series when you first started thinking about it, and how do you get it?
Yeah, it was always envisioned as a series. And this is how it came about. The Frank Jakubowski, I always keep coming back to, but the Frank Jakubowski series, it's very much rooted in place. Place has a lot to do with all the novels. And as I said, the Northern Divide, Frank Jakubowski is, all those series are going to take place in the Northern Divide. It's going to be very important to that series where it takes place. It's going to be very important to that character. Danny Barrett is going to be something completely different because this character, he's an undercover police officer who travels around. And that was the whole idea. That was the starting idea behind this series and this character. So to do something completely different, you don't stay in one place. Come up with this character that will move around so that every novel will be in a different place. I can't think just off the top of my head what series, but there's a few series that do that. So there's a character and they're always in a different place. And that's what's going to happen with Danny Barrett. So the first novel in the series, The Sweet Goodbye, he was in Maine, and he was in the woods in Maine. So in a way, the location wasn't that different from a Frank Jakubowski series, because the Northern Divide, he's in the woods. Mm-hmm. It's in the woods. The trees change slightly, but it's basically in the woods. So I wanted to do something very different with Cape Rage. So he's on the other side. So he's jumped from one ocean to the other side, from one side of the country to the other. And it's the ocean. We've opened it up, vistas, horizons. Woods aren't all that important. You can see on the cover, it's the ocean. So it's a very different setting. Place is always going to be important to my novels. I think the novels that I like the best, Chandler, if you want to get back to noir for a minute, when I think of Chandler, you think of LA. You think of the Santa Ana winds. Place is important. I think a great story has a great sense of place. And that's what I try to do with my writing. People tell me it works when it goes well. That's what they're talking about. When somebody says it's evocative, I think that's what they're talking about. When they say atmospheric, I know that's what they're talking about. So I like describing. I like descriptive passages as well. And I think the great noir writers, you think of them being snappy and, you know, short and these short cutting sentences, but the really great ones like Chandler, like Hammett, his very first novel, Red Harvest, do I have that right? It starts with a description of a place, Poisonville. If you read that very first pages of Hammett's very first novel, it's a description of a place. Like the dialogue is very snappy and you get the bad guys right away and somebody's dead within three pages. And there's a woman that's going to break your heart within four pages. But it starts with a description of a place. So that's going to be a big part of the Danny Barrett series, and he's going to move around, and place is going to be very important to it. On the third one, he's going to be in Florida. I spend a lot of time in Tampa during the winter, and so he's going to go down south. I realize he might go from ocean to ocean. Maybe he's going to do four corners of the United States and then dive into the middle somewhere, Indiana for the fifth one. So that was a whole idea, getting this character and an undercover character. He has an interesting background that I'm hoping to develop. He's become an undercover police officer because he arrested his brother. He betrayed his brother. The very first sentence in The Sweet Goodbye is, my very first undercover case, I arrested my brother. That was the first sentence of the first Danny Barrett story. So he's carrying a lot of baggage. He can't go home to Detroit. So he's ended up as almost this kind of, you know, lone wolf undercover cop. He specializes in that. If you have a case, if you're an FBI, it doesn't have to be FBI, by the way. Some people think it's always going to be FBI. Could be ATF, could be anybody. If you have a case that it's falling apart, you need some help, you pick up the phone, right? And you might get Danny Barrett. And he's going to come in because he's got specialties. And you're far too young, Alan, to remember this, but there used to be an old TV series called Wise Guy. And that was kind of the premise behind that show. He was an undercover cop that, you know, he get called in. Do you know Blondie? Do you know the group Blondie? The
music group? Yes.
Deborah Harry?
Harry?
In the second season of Wise Guy, Deborah Harry and Tim Curry from Rocky Horror, they were in the entire second series. It was a cool second series. The main guy and Wise Guy, Ken Wall, then self-voted, and, you know, that was the end of Wise Guy. Mm-hmm. I stole the idea. So it's an undercover cop that will go from case to case to case, and that's what we have. That's what Danny Barrett is.
Oh, yeah, and so place takes a big part in it, you said. So when you're writing a novel, do you, like, make sure that you've visited the place? Is that important to you, or...?
Well, luckily so far, I know these places, so I haven't really had to visit them so far. But yeah, I'm familiar with them.
Yeah.
As I said, the Frank Jakubowski series, The Northern Divide, I wrote stories about that place. And when I was writing stories about it, I thought, this is a cool place, right? Like, this place is abandoned. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a cabin there, and there's no other cabin around for 20 miles. You can do anything up here. And, you know, I think, God, this would be a cool place to set a crime series. So I'm familiar with the place. The Maine Woods, not that far from the Eastern Townships in Quebec. I'm familiar with the Eastern Townships in Quebec. The Pacific Northwest, not sure if I mentioned this already, but I lived on Vancouver Island for a year and a half, so I'm familiar with there. When we go down to Florida, I'm familiar with the Tampa area. So it's not research so much as I'm familiar with the areas. I wouldn't write about something that I'm not familiar with. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way of getting into trouble. I think in your series, you're writing about areas that you're familiar with too.
I'm the same way too. Yeah. If not, I'll feel lost.
Yeah, exactly. And you're going to get caught too, I think.
There's no left turn on that street or whatever, you know. Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, well, that's just silly. But I think if you want to describe a place, which is fun, you know, that's, you know, quite often that's what makes me want to write a story. Like, I'm looking, I think it's different motivation for different writers. Maybe some writers, it's you imagine a story from beginning, middle to end. But quite often with me, I'm walking down a street and I'll see a river, or I'll see this, or I'll see that, and I'll say, I want to describe that. I think it's the same way with Chandler. There's no way he can describe the Santa Ana wind and, you know, running down and, oh, he's got some beauty, you know, like, he's experienced that and he wants to write about it. So yeah, it's not research so much as wanting to describe what you've already experienced.
And what's your writing process like then? If we get into the nitty gritty of writing, do you, like, outline, or do you write?
I do it. It's funny. I just had to do another interview. Nowadays, it's funny, with the death of newspapers. Everybody, an interview nowadays is they email you questions, right? And you have to answer. That's what passes for an interview nowadays. This isn't an interview. I'm basically doing your work for you. Yeah, this is an interview. You're sending me questions by email. But I just had to do this. I come up with scenes, and I've done some reading recently, and Chandler was the same way. Well, I guess I am comparing myself to Chandler. I'm not saying that I'm comparable to Chandler, but Chandler was the same way, and you can see it in his stories. And it caused him some problems sometimes because it didn't always hang together. Do you know the great story about Chandler with the chauffeur?
No.
I forget. Was it The Long Goodbye? I forget which one, but there's a chauffeur that's killed. I think it was The Long Goodbye. There's a chauffeur that's killed in one of his stories, and he never wraps that up. He never says what happened to the chauffeur. And when they were making a movie of it, Billy Wilder called him up and said, who killed the chauffeur? And Chandler's response was, I have no idea. Why? And then he said, after a pause, why? Do you think it's important? I think it's important. But Chandler wrote by scenes. He'd imagine scenes, and he'd have all these scenes, and then he'd string them together. Some of his novels, A Long Goodbye being one, were actually short stories that he'd string together. He'd have some Philip Marlowe short stories, and then he'd string them together, and here's a novel. So it wasn't a beginning, middle, end story kind of a thing. And I'm sort of the same way. I have scenes, and then I have to string them together. I wish it was beginning, middle, end. I think it'd be a lot easier if it was beginning, middle, end, because quite often you have these scenes, and how do you connect them? And I can kind of see how you get here, to there, to there, but this one's kind of sticking out in left field, and I don't know how in the world you're going to connect this. So that's how, you know, the process and how the actual, the logistics of it is early in the morning. I get up early in the morning, 5 in the morning, that's when I start writing. And that's a process. I do it by scene, by scene, by scene, which I think a lot of people do. I've read recently the fellow that wrote Gray Man.
Mark Gurney.
I believe he does the same thing. I saw an interview with him recently. I think he does the same thing. I think James Lee Burke does the same thing. You imagine some scenes. The fake interview. Thank God for you for doing a real interview, but the fake interview. Do you start at the end? Quite often, the scene I have, which compounds my problem, is at the end. Mm. Like, I'll have the final scenes. And then, okay, that's great. So where did we start? I don't know.
How do I get there, right?
How do I get there, yeah. The one exception, interestingly enough, is Cape Rage. It's the one exception out of the, I guess, is the seventh novel. With this one, I did have the opening scene. The opening scene is one of the first things I had, which made it a little bit easier. But the one before, The Sweet Goodbye, it was one of the very final scenes that I had. And then, you know, you got to back it all the way up. Hmm. What about you?
Oh, I outlined. I try to outline. I kind of do the scene by scene summary, and then I kind of flesh it up from there. So
Should try that one of these days.
Yeah, well, you know, half the time I don't end up following it anyway. So, but it just helps helps me get organized, I guess. But yeah.
You know, so. I'm trying to do a bit more of that. I did try to do a bit. Well, on the fourth Yakubuski one that I just did, I did do a bit more of that, and it did help. Although, as you just said, it didn't. It's not flawless, and then
I think it varies because I've interviewed a lot of writers, and some wouldn't be able to write if they had it all outlined. So they need to have just figured out as they go. But
I don't quite do that. That's what I used to do. Just completely jump off a cliff and hope you build a plane before you schmuck your face. I think that's a little bit foolish now. So I have a variation of that somewhere in the middle, I think, is where you want to be probably.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. That's what Lee Child does. He just sits every September. He starts, well, he retired now, but every September he would start to write a story and figure it out from there.
So it's nerve wracking. It's a younger man's game. Maybe that's why he's retired and let his brother go through all that stress.
Let his brother deal with it now.
That's funny.
And that is something that I've seen with Danny Barrick, like going from town to town. It kind of reminds me of Jack Reacher a little bit, you know, how Jack Reacher goes around.
A little bit, I guess so. I hadn't thought about that. A little bit.
And so in this one too, now there's a little bit of like I don't want to give too much away, but there's a powerful family that Danny Barrick's got to deal with, and a psychopath. That's a lot of fun. Two of my favorite things is mob type stuff, serial killers. How did that play into the story, and how did you get the ideas to combine the two?
You know, the psychopath you refer to, that was what I meant with one of the very first scenes. It's that psychopath who gets betrayed. The family betrays him, leaves him for dead. So this is how revenge is a big part of the story. And that scene where he's left for dead, but he's not dead. And he suspects it's his wife. I'll give a little bit of the story away. He suspects it's his wife, who's part of his family, has betrayed him. That's one of the opening scenes. So I just had a quick look at the book, getting ready for the interview. I had a quick look at it again. And I think that's in the first chapter. There's a prologue and there's a first chapter. So that scene is in the first chapter. And that's the first thing I wrote, that as he's laying there wondering, you know, was it my wife? Was it my wife? Yes, it was my wife. I'm really angry at my wife. If I survive, what should I do? That was the first scene. And I did want to set that up because another thing you haven't mentioned, Alan, and whether you should, but the family lives on an island. And I thought that would be kind of interesting to have Barrett on an island and they start to get suspicious of him. So imagine being on an island. You don't have a boat. They're not giving you the keys to a boat. So you're on an island and they start to get suspicious of you. So there's that, you know, creeping suspense on the island as this guy is making his way to the island because he was shot like 1,000 miles away. So he has to get his way to the island. And I thought, you know, that's kind of tense. That's going to be kind of suspenseful. So that was kind of, you know, in terms of plotting, that's what I wanted to have, know that. And I think it worked. I think that worked. So it's like double suspense, if you will, like him being stuck in that island trying to figure it all out. I won't give too much away, but his undercover assignment is to try to figure out whether this family has robbed a bank, get evidence of that, as they all get suspicion of him. I love the bad guy, that guy that was shot. His name was Henry Carter. Mm-hmm. And I just loved him as a bad character. I was sad when, you know, he didn't make it. I don't want to give too much away, but he doesn't make it. The bad guy doesn't make it. And I was sitting there thinking, it's a real shame. I wish he could have made it because, you know, I would have loved to have seen him. I'm almost tempted to do another book where you get the young Henry Carter because he was quite a character. And anyways, that's what got me thinking, you know, him being stuck on an island and this bad guy can boom, 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 boom. You know, he makes quite a, well, it's a trip. Did you read the, not everybody reads the thing. I don't want to put you on the spot, but it's not easy getting his way to the island, right? He starts with nothing, so he has to get to the island. So there's a few, there's some adventures getting to the island. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I love that character. I love that character.
Yeah, and so that's interesting too because you're different points of views. Is that something that you like that you're thinking?
I do that all the time. I probably do it way too much. It makes it way too much work.
I like that as a reader though. It keeps things more interesting when you get in from different perspectives.
You know, what's interesting about that though is it's a first person character, Danny Barrett. It's the first person protagonist. Well, look at this yourself. But I don't know how often a first person protagonist has the different points of view. I actually researched this. Chandler doesn't do this. You know, you stay with Philip Marlowe from beginning to end. Ross McDonald, Lou Archer, you stay with Lou Archer from beginning to end. It's a bit unusual to have a first-person protagonist and have the two points of view. Mm-hmm. James Lee Burke does it. It's a bit unusual. I wish I could not do it. I've told myself so many times, Ron, stop it, stop it, stop it. I tried it, but anyways, I ended up doing it. I enjoyed doing it. I think it adds something to a novel if you get the two points of view. Mm-hmm. And I just can't stop doing it. I wish I could. I wish I could just stay with him. I think it'd be simpler if I could stay with the one guy all the way through. And I just can't do it. I don't know why I can't do it. But so I ended up with the two points of view. This one actually, I think, has three points of view at times. And there you have it. I just end up doing it.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions too, about do you ever surprise yourself in the direction the stories take when you're writing it? And like here you said, you're trying to do one thing and you ended up doing something else. So.
Yeah, even when I'm consciously doing it, I'm almost like trying to tie my hands down and say, don't do it, don't do it. And then they come across a pastor and say, oh, that would work just too well. Why not do it? And I'm even telling myself, because you're making work for yourself, idiot. Just, okay. And you say, okay, the next one, you do it on the next one. I've told myself one of these books, so you're going to stay with the guy. And it's just, you know, if Chandler can do it, you could, or if these other people could do it. I'm not saying I'm going to write a book as good as Chandler, but maybe it's, you know, attention deficit disorder or something. I just cannot stay with the guy, you know, continuously. I keep on thinking, oh, well, what's going on over there? You know, just then you just diverge and you go somewhere else. But maybe it is just a real skill that I don't have. But to stay with the one character and not break away from that character, which is what happens with the Philip Marlowe story. You never leave Philip Marlowe. If you read Ross McDonald, you never leave Lou Archer. I'm not sure if it's the same with Jack Reacher. Maybe it is. Maybe you never leave Jack Reacher. I haven't done the research, but I have with Chandler. I have with Ross McDonald. I think it's the same with John D. McDonald. I don't know, but I don't think you never leave that character. So yeah. It's a skill.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So So when you were reading those books, you started out as a fan, but then as a writer, you read them to like try to study the craft. Is that?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. I find that the best. That's the best way to learn, isn't it? Is just to read some of the greats out there. And
yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was fictionalizing the Northern Divide, when I started doing that, I was wondering, well, can you do that? Like, can you have real places and just drop in a fake place? Like, is that allowed? Is that going to confuse people? Can you do it? And I thought. And then Santa Teresa from Ross McDonald. And I remember the day I said, yes, you can do this. Have no fear. Boldly go. You can do this. And then Stephen King reconfirmed it. Yes, you can do this. Quit worrying about it. Yeah, do some research. Yeah.
And I'm quick. I always ask my guests about the tools that they use. So do you write with Word or something different or by hand?
Microsoft Word.
Microsoft Word, yeah.
Only program I've ever used.
Okay, yeah.
Apple Mac is the only computer I've ever used. Mm-hmm.
And so then, so you say you write in the morning, so you're pretty, you have set hours, you try to write every day? And
I have, yes. Yeah, the short answer, yes. Yes, I try to write every day. Okay. Although I have just finished the fourth Jakubowski one. I finished it just before Christmas. It varies, right? When you're finishing something, it's very intense. And then that was very intense finishing that one. Christmas came, so it relaxed a little bit. So it's not, you know, I'm not totally religious about it. Some, you know, when you finish a major project, you relax a little bit. And then if you're not right into it, it's kind of so relaxed, it doesn't seem. But yes, I'm in front of a computer and I'm doing something every day. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different phase.
Although I haven't started something and it's seriously, it's different when you start something seriously and then it seems like then you have hours. It seems like you have office hours when you're writing something seriously. You have office hours, and then
yeah. Especially at this phase now. Now that you're in the promotion, now you're talking with people like me versus writing and.
Yeah. But I write in the morning. I write every day. That's pretty much the short answer. Although I try not on the weekend. You know, I do have family, so I give everybody a break. John D. McDonald, and it's funny how some people do it, and some people are very, he was religious. I just read this recently. John D. McDonald wrote 8, 9, 10 hours a day, but Monday to Friday. And I guess the deal he had with his wife, and he made good money. He was successful author for a long time. Monday to Friday. 5 o'clock on Friday, he knocked off and took his wife to the country club, the golf and country club, and they had a big dinner on Friday. And then he was back at it on Saturday. But, you know, casual hours, Saturday and Sunday, but 7 days a week. And Monday to Friday, it was 9, 10 hours. But 5 o'clock Friday, knocked off, and he took his wife to the golf and country club. He lived in Sarasota. I've been to his house. I've seen the golf and country club. And that was the deal with the wife.
Boy, and those guys
are doing. King still keeps insane hours, I believe. So
yeah, he says he writes at least 6 pages a day, no matter what, is what he tries to do. Stephen King.
Oh, I bet he writes more than that. But
and John McDonald, those guys, they're all writing on typewriters too back in those days.
Can you imagine?
No.
Neither could I.
Can you imagine the pile of papers that you have to go through afterwards? Bad enough to do it in a Word document.
I know. But it shows the interest. I wonder this. I can't imagine doing it on a typewriter. But I don't know. I don't know how they did the editing. But it just shows you. Just they must have been so focused. It must have been just such a rhythm. Do you think maybe you get lazy on a computer? You just know that you can move things around. You can edit it. Do you get a bit lazy, maybe?
I would think so. You probably write a lot cleaner if you knew you had to go back and, you know, retype things or, you know.
I would think so.
So we probably write a lot dirtier because we don't, you know, it's easier to go back.
You wonder. You wonder. Yeah, you just have to wonder.
Yeah, I'll fix it later.
Yeah, you just move on. Yeah.
So, yeah. So what are you working on now? So you said you just, Cape Rage comes out on the 19th. You have a new Jabowski that came out in December, right? So what's
it next? Came out the end of November. Yeah, basically December. And that one, Muskie Falls. I kind of like that one. That was a little bit different. It was, and actually, I stole part of that idea from Stephen King. It was that started off as a short story that grew and grew. It was supposed to be a very casual thing. I think it did end up being a very casual thing, but it was kind of, it was Jakubowski's first case. He was being interviewed by a reporter. It actually, there's some nice little twists and turns. It turned out to be a whodunit. It had some nice things in it, but it's a bit unusual because it's not a full-blown Jakubowski. He doesn't have the same characters that a faux Yakubuski would. It was just Yak being interviewed by a reporter, recalling this first case, which was never solved. And so it goes back and forth from him talking to the reporter in current time, going, remembering his first case, and then, which was never solved. And as he's retelling that case, something occurs to him, you know, about what he was missing. And then he goes back and he solves the case, which was, and there's a neat character. One of the reasons I stuck with that was there really were some neat characters in that. It was like a locked room mystery again. There was four suspects in that first case, but he could never figure out which one it was. And then he figured it out as he was talking to the reporter. So it was a bit unusual. The structure was a bit unusual. Had a neat kind of an ending. And people seemed to enjoyed it. Muskie Falls was the title of that one. That came out just the end of November. And I'm toying around with the next Danny Barrett one, which, again, is going to be set in Florida around Tampa. Mm-hmm. There's and it's going to have a circus theme. Actually, it's Sarasota. We're talking about John D. McDonald. He lived in Sarasota. And well, Sarasota is where all the circus performers used to winter. They'd travel around in the heyday of the circus. They all traveled around on trains. And in the winter, they'd stop for a few months, and they lived in Sarasota in this town called Gibsonton, which is a cool little town. It was founded by circus performers and carny performers. There was a difference between circus performers and the carny people and the freaks. A lot of the carny people did the sideshows, and they were the freaks. And Gibsonton, where it's founded, is still there. It's still there.
Oh, wow.
It was founded by the freaks. And they have, what is it, the carnival, anyway, there's a trade association for these people. It was founded back in the 30s. It's still there. The trade association is still there. They have one of the biggest bars I've ever seen in Gibsonton, Florida. Anyways, there's going to be a circus theme to the whole thing, and Danny Bear is going to be down in Florida when the circus comes to town. So I've been playing around with some ideas on that. And I'm going to be going full bore on that, I hope, in a couple of weeks. And that's going to be me writing till the fall.
Oh, that sounds great. I really enjoy that movie, that old movie called Freaks. I can't remember it's from the 50s, I think. That was a very good movie about that whole scene.
Oh, I'm going to have to look it up. Well, that whole thing just fascinates me. The Ringling Brothers, their house is a big museum just outside of Sarasota. And the whole area around there is just really interesting.
Oh, interesting, yeah. Yeah, okay, well, that's great. So, yeah, looking forward to that one. And, of course, Cape Rage comes out on the 19th. So by the time
March 19th, yes.
Yeah, by the time people are listening to this, go check it out. Go get it on Amazon. And, Ron, so, yeah, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
Thank you for listening to Meet the Thriller Author. If you enjoy the show, please take a moment to rate and review it on your preferred podcast platform. Your feedback makes all the difference in connecting with fellow thriller and mystery fans, and it helps them find this podcast on the podcasting apps like Apple and Spotify. For show notes, transcripts, and archives of hundreds of author interviews, please go to thrillingreads.com. From there, don't forget to sign up for the Thrilling Reads newsletter for exclusive access to giveaways, discounts, and astounding thriller and mystery book recommendations and reviews. Check out my thriller books at alanpeterson.com. And remember, that's Peterson with an E, not an O. Until next time, keep the pages turning and keep the mysteries unraveling.